I'm William Shutkin.
And I'm Andy Bush.
Welcome to the Sustainable City Show, a new podcast where we discuss bold ideas and innovations for green, equitable, and climate-friendly cities with the people making them happen. Today, we're experimenting with a new podcast format, less linear, less binary, more conversational, informal, improvisational. We intend to focus on issues both of the moment and bigger picture, longer term, all related somehow to sustainable cities, this podcast's soul's purpose. To help on this new leg of our podcast journey, we have a guest co-host, Devin Bertram. Devin's an old friend and OG in the sustainable built environment field, about 20 years worth. She's the vice president of sustainability consulting at Stoke, where she advises clients on how to define, develop, implement, and manage sustainability programs and standards for their building portfolios that align with their corporate brand, values, and purpose. Devin holds an MBA from Presidio Graduate School and a BA in Environmental Studies from Middlebury College. Hey, Devin, and hey, Andy.
Good to see you, William.
Great to see you. Great to see you both. Welcome, Devin.
Thanks, William. Thanks for having me.
Of course. So, you know, a couple of things as we start. What we want to talk about today is working from home, and is WFH HTS here to stay or not, or something in between, which is a really fun, interesting, provocative subject. Now that we're perhaps in the beginning stages of the long tail of COVID-19, if in fact that's where we are. So that'll be super fun. Before we jump in to the topic, which I'll help to moderate over the next hour or so, a couple of things. Deb, I would love for you to introduce yourself to our audience sort of professionally and more personally. And then Andy, maybe if you could sort of chime in with some of your thoughts on the new format, since it really was your idea based on your own podcast listening experience, and what you are most interested in and excited about with the new format. So can we do that before we dive into the content?
Great.
So Deb, want to tell our millions across the globe who you are?
All the big fans here, sure. Again, thanks for having me. Super excited about being part of this new format. Again, I'm Devin Bertram. I am based in Boulder, Colorado. And William, I think you covered it well in the regards to the professional front. I've been in the sustainability high-performance building realm for almost a couple decades, and really started with, you know, your LEED certification efforts and third-party framework, and kind of dove in learning by fire there, and have expanded my interest and role in really helping to support more portfolio-wide goals and strategies and interests, and really aligning that with values. I think that's what really excites me, is just aligning, whether it's from a single asset level or a portfolio wide, how can we align this built environment with what feels good and what aligns with what is meaningful to us as individuals, as employees, employer, communities, and so forth. And so that's what excites me about this work. I love talking about processes and philosophizing around various things. So excited to talk with you both about our work from home, work from anywhere. WFA, as you know, another group is calling it. So we've got WFW, work from wherever. So acronym city continues. I'm excited to chat through this with you all today.
No, and I think this is perfect kind of subject matter to kick this off with, in the sense that I look at the last 3 or 4 years and COVID and the changing nature of inflation and all the things that wars in Ukraine, and things that none of us would have ever guessed or thought about. And I've probably been wrong more in the last 3 years than in the last 10 years in terms of my predictions or thoughts about what's going on in the world. And I think the world is so fluid and so changing, and it's good to have a conversational framework where people can share different opinions and agree and disagree. And if anyone thinks they know the future right now, that's the one thing you know is wrong, right? And so I think the whole idea here is let's make it conversational. I think we picked workplace as a great first place to go in the sense that none of us know. We know kind of what happened during COVID and some of the good environmental benefits, some of the difficult social issues as part of it. But I don't think any of us really know exactly where it's going, but I think we have a lot of thoughts and opinions. So the idea is let's spend an hour talking about that.
Great. And Anne, just real quick on the format itself, you were sort of inspired by a particular podcast. Why don't we?
I should give credit to All In, which is a group that is four individuals who do a wonderful job of really talking about it. It kind of stems from technology in Silicon Valley, but they're open to talking about just about anything. And the way that they're willing to agree, disagree, give each other the opportunity to share their opinions, and they'll support each other, they'll disagree with each other, they'll expand the discussion. One will talk for a while, they'll go back and forth for a while. I've become fascinated by it. And honestly, it's, probably behind Joe Rogan, it's right in there in top podcasts. And I just love the format.
Great. Awesome. So from acronym city to the sustainable city and work from home, let's sort of start to dig in. I think each of us has a position about working from home, commuting, as we've discussed beforehand. I probably have the strongest opinions, but that's because I'm really
go last then probably.
Yeah, exactly. And as an entrepreneur, which isn't to say that either of you is not, I just love the idea of sort of going against the grain and avoiding the herd, or in this case, the traffic. So why don't we start with Andy or Dev, maybe Dev.
Go ahead, Dev.
When did you first start sort of noticing as an employee in a corporate setting? You were in San Francisco for a while. You've now been in Boulder, Denver, back mm-hmm. in Denver for a while. First, when did you start noticing the shift after the pandemic occurred? Mm-hmm. In commuting and working habits, how did it affect you personally? And where are you today on sort of benefits and costs of work from wherever?
Yeah. Interestingly enough, I feel like I've been comfortable with, on a personal level, work from home pre-pandemic. Stoke and even, back in the day, YRNG, the firm I was at prior to Stoke, we had a really flexible culture and didn't have a requirement to go into the office. And so I was used to this, now we're calling more formally a hybrid approach, and really loved that flexibility. So personally, it's been comfortable for me. I love it and have appreciated working for and with companies that have offered that benefit to the employees. And certainly working through the pandemic, and then now today, we're navigating, what's right, because we're also recognizing with a company that's grown, Stoke has grown almost three times in the last couple years. And, we were at 30 people in 2019, we're at over 80 now. And with that growth and with work from home and without that constant engagement, you've got your trade-offs. And that's something that we're trying to navigate, because So right now we have hubs and offices where we try to create an engaging workplace that people want to come to. And it's a mixed bag. Sometimes people come, but we myself included, like the comforts of home, the convenience, not commuting. But then you go and a change of scenery is great. And so I appreciate that. And the conversations and the water cooler conversations and so forth. At the same time, I also see tools and just our capabilities of engaging and collaborating and creativity virtually improving. We have a long way to go, but there's tools and resources helping us navigate that in better ways than they were even a year ago, and certainly 3 years ago.
Yeah, and I would say for me, I don't know if Zoom stock is any indicator in terms of their price, but Zoom went wild at the beginning of the pandemic, and then it settled down. And it was partially because Teams came around and everybody had a competitor. So I don't know that that's the way to look at the world, is Zoom stock, but for me, I'm probably the most old school of all of us in that I went into the office every day, and that was my thing and my gig, and I expected everybody else to go into the office every day. And as I look at kind of how I've reacted to this changing world, I'm no longer interested in going into the office every day, although I do probably still do it 2 or 3 days a week. I'm bored being at home at my office because it's not fantastic. It's probably better than most people's office, but, and I'm trying to find the middle world, and we're actually looking at developing a co-working space for companies like us and people like me. Mm-hmm. And you have to be careful about developing anything that's in your own image. That's a dangerous thing to do, but I like the thought of being around other people. Our office is even more boring than my home, or as boring as my home these days. And so the idea of being someplace that's engaging with other people, even though they may be very different than you, I think may be the new middle world. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I everything you've both said resonates with me. And Deb, I think you bring up a great point too, which is, look, WFH did not start with the pandemic, right? At a certain scale, never before seen perhaps, but many of us have been working in a hybrid mode for as long as we can remember. That's my case. I mean, I grew up with a father who was a doctor who worked nonstop, did house calls, but really had a kind of a sort of flexible, very non-corporate office situation or setup. And I really never experienced as a young person a corporate commute or a parent who lived that kind of lifestyle. So when I started my career 30 years ago, my expectation was I would sort of design a work style around my own kind of interest, flexibility. I didn't want to commute. It wasn't because of climate or emissions 30 years ago necessarily. It was just quality of life. And as I often joke with friends and colleagues, you know, I don't think I've ever really had an office 30 years later. I've been
Okay, so I'm going to interrupt and kind of use the new format as part of that, in that I think the counterpoint to that is when you think about when Google was beating the crap out of Yahoo, the new CEO of Yahoo at the time said, everyone back to the office. Mm-hmm. We're losing it because we're not collaborating and we're not as hardcore and in the office and state of the art as Google. And I look at ChatGPT right now, which has grown to 100 million users in 3 or 4 months, which is amazing. They're the biggest kind of tenant out looking in the San Francisco market for office space. Yeah. Yeah. And they're saying, we did this because we collaborated, we were all together, and mm-hmm. we couldn't have done this if we had acted like Google and others have with their work from home programs right now, or Twitter. So what do you think?
Well, I think the social science or the jury is out. There's, you know, like any complicated subject, there are many views, and it'll be a while before we really figure out cause and effect. And look, Yahoo had other problems.
True story, as my kids would say.
Yeah, and you know, ChatGPT, namely, well, OpenAI, the company behind it, who happens to be a client of Jenna's, you know, they are the tech company of the moment for sure. And we'll see how that plays out. But I guess my point is, should we not be evolving the way we think about work, the future of work, and lots of people are indeed thinking about it and researching it, just as we've been thinking about evolving, you know, the very purpose, the role of companies, of institutions generally in the 21st century. You know, and this idea, this sort of binary linear idea, speaking of format, that you know, you have a home place and then you get in a car or ideally a bus or train, go to work, come home at a certain hour every day or many days.
Sure, I mean, We all went to school with a clock on the wall, and the clock was provided by the factories to make sure we'd all show up at time.
Or the railroad companies, yeah.
The factories, right? Exactly. So, yeah, what is the evolution of work? Forget whether it's work for home or whatever. We have had this binary, I'm either at work or at home. What is the future? And the future is different, as you said, William, from whether it's someone who's an individual running a business or a large business. You know, I'm on the jury for ULI this year looking at projects, and one of them is one of the Google campuses. It houses 4,000 people. What is the future of work, per se?
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think it's so, there's not one answer, you know, and I think it depends so much about what is the type of work and what is the setting that that type of work requires. And even within our own work and profession, you know, there's some days where I need one type of setting or can be most productive in that one setting. And then another day where I need a whole different setting and a whole new different set of people and tools and resources. And so I think it just speaks to, well, there's not one answer and the need for flexibility, which is exciting, but hard to define.
Yeah.
About this is what the future is.
If you're an accountant, it may be one thing. If you're part of a team developing software, it may be another.
Right. Like the ChatGPT piece, you know, like that makes sense. And then I know for myself or my team members, there's a resistance to go into the office because they're like, I'm so much more productive at home. But that, you know, even the word and how we define or what we think about productive is really fascinating. It's like, what does that mean? Like how much, what is our output?
Let's also not forget that there are certain workers for whom WFH isn't really an option, which goes to the equity, right? The essential workforce that the pandemic really brought to the surface, thankfully, one of many silver linings, thinking about essential workers like fire people and police people and hospital workers,
wait staff,
educators, you know, so many who really don't have the option, at least not in our current way of thinking
the
about
world
it.
Of service to others, whether it's teaching or in a restaurant, has not changed much, has not been that affected by the pandemic and is likely to return to what was at least the mean at one point.
Exactly. Which then goes to something, Andy, you and I have talked about on our podcast many times, which is the need for workforce and affordable housing closer to job centers. So that folks are not, in fact, commuting long distances because they have to show up, right? So a really important equity dimension to this. And generally, this is a conversation are called by people like Robert Reich, the former labor secretary, Berkeley professor, called symbolic analysts. Remember back in the late 80s, early 90s, folks who essentially sit in front of computers are engaging with ideas and concepts and writing and communicating, but not necessarily hands-on, for whom virtual tools of the sort, Dev, you mentioned that are improving for remote work, you know, those tools are the tools of their trade.
Well, and I think as a society, we're becoming increasingly more maybe silo or bifurcated in that there was service and white collar employees and manufacturing and others. White collar employees just got divided into 10 categories in the last 2 or 3 years in terms of work from anywhere, work from home, or get your butt back to the office kind of thing.
Yeah. And talk about AI, right? We've been talking about lawyers being automated out of existence for some time. And there are indeed different classes of those white collar workers. But in general, we as white collar professionals do have a lot of flexibility that so many others have. But what about this question, you guys, which is one that I think about whenever I'm out commuting just around Boulder, Denver, and other points, which is the simple fact that we are still a car-driven, excuse the pun, car-dependent, auto-dependent culture That's our MO. Big transit systems are the exception, and many of them are sort of falling apart. Third class systems in a world full of first class systems. And the fact that VMT and emissions from transportation, the transportation sector, is now the number one contributor to GHG emissions in the US. It's overtaken the industrial sector. And with buildings a close second, it's now transportation emissions that are the number one climate contributor. So how do we square that circle? The incredible benefits of not having to commute by car, truck, bus even, or rail that doesn't depend on green electricity. Those incredible carbon benefits versus, you know, resorting to business as usual in ever bigger cars, even if they are increasingly hybrid or EV.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's where I lean towards the work from home. And perhaps you have a single anchor day of the week that brings people together, and you have a company that supports or provides incentives or benefits for public transportation. I mean, I know that that's not available everywhere. It may not be feasible, but to support as much as possible those alternative options.
I mean, Deb, you consult on this, right? You not only work for a company with these kinds of values that's thinking about climate and quality of life and family and personal wellness, but you also, your job is to bring this kind of knowledge and these practices to your clients. What are you seeing out there? Are more management teams, executives getting it? From climate to wellness, or is it still like, I'm not sure we're comfortable, you know, moving this model?
I think they are getting it based on climate and wellness and talent attraction and retention, because it feels like people are wanting that flexibility and autonomy, and that leans more towards the work from home piece. So I think it's almost, it's multiple benefits, and I'm glad that climate is on the right side of that.
Man, I see it as a little different, but I mean, similar. I look at it and I think we had this kind of wonderful come to Jesus moment in terms of COVID, and we saw how much VMT went down for whatever it was, a 6 or 10 month period. And it was,
and the skies cleared up.
It was amazing. And yeah. And
water. Yeah.
And then I've started in my own mind, and I don't know the numbers or the statistics, but how many people in the service sector don't have any choice? So they're back commuting. Is that 60 or 70% of, I think that's why C470 is busy and 36 by all of us in Boulder. And is those people have to go to work. They have no choice. Mm-hmm. It's not a decision for them as part of it. And the work from home part of it gets to be a relatively small subset of a professional group that if you're doing something that doesn't require collaboration, or if your company hasn't made you come back to the office, you can kind of have that balance. And so I think where we saw this really drastic change for a very short period of time, it's all kind of eroding, and we are kind of reverting to the mean, at least in terms of the big picture side of it. I don't know.
Yeah. By the way, Deb,
wish I were more optimistic.
No, I was just going to say, I like to be optimistic.
Yeah, do you have a client?
But you're right. What's that?
Do you have a client company that you can point to that's really sort of leading the way to this this post-pandemic, post-VMT future, if we're really going to solve for climate and for, you know, quality of life?
Honestly, it feels like everyone's just trying to figure out. I don't think anyone says, okay, I've got the answer. And that's where it's challenging, kind of, Andy, what you were saying in the start of this, is that there's a lot of unknowns right now. And what we thought was going to be the answer, you know, in June of 2020, where we didn't think, you know, COVID was going to last for a few years, you know, everyone kind of just paused their return to office plans or thinking, like, what is our new model? Because every time they created something, new variables came up, or things
we're on return to office 5.0 or something.
Yeah, totally. Mm-hmm.
But isn't there something also perhaps more insidious going on right now? Because I do think the jury's in on the relationship, cause and effect, between commuter patterns, quality of life, and climate, well documented, well understood.
Mm-hmm.
I think generally speaking, most folks, if given the choice, like the idea of hybrid and flexibility.
I would agree. Basically,
personal sovereignty. Like, does anybody mm-hmm. really want a boss dictating when you can show up and punching a clock, you know, 19th century style? But putting all that aside, and Andy, this is, well, it's for both of you, because this is what we all do every day, but especially the two of you more than I do, which is the commercial real estate sector. I mean, CBRE and every other big real estate brokerage firm around the world has a serious interest in seeing tenants come back to offices, and owners of that real estate. So both the brokers and the owners, very interested in seeing folks come back. Now, the owner doesn't necessarily care whether it's a commercial tenant or user or residential one or institutional one or government one, or if someone mm-hmm. buys them out, you know, at a decent IRR to take their money and go somewhere else. But Andy and Deb, isn't it the case that the commercial real estate sector today and those who own and trade in this real estate are looking at, you know, the post-COVID world and like, what the heck is going on here? I mean, look at the conversations in places like New York and San Francisco.
And I think the thing that's interesting is there are three different conversations in the sense of New York, Chicago, San Francisco. In Chicago, life is kind of back to normal in a lot of ways. In New York, people are still trying to figure it out and going back and forth. San Francisco right now is an unbelievably difficult situation that no one really has the answer for. And so mm-hmm. I think that's the other thing that is happening just in our society, and COVID's accelerating trends that were already happening, which is the regionalization of real estate and all of this. But I look at, there's a building that recently came to market in San Francisco that would have been worth $800 a square foot 2 or 3 years ago. And mm-hmm. it's just had offers come in at between $125 and $250 a square foot. And that's scary in the sense of what's happening. And I have a friend who's Ben Trinnell, who's a partner with Gensler in San Francisco. And he blamed it. He made an observation of that's the downside of a monoculture. And San Francisco office was kind of a monoculture within a monoculture in that it was tech office, office. And the veneer of residential and retail and restaurants as a percentage of the total was quite small. And so I think it's time to rethink cities a little bit in the sense of the post-COVID world and how people are going to work and live.
Interesting, right? We saw that too, Andy, in New York, that these great cities, U.S. cities, are not really as mixed use as we thought they were.
And New York bumps back a little quicker because it, I don't know the percentages, but I think it might be a little more mixed use than California or than San Francisco. San Francisco, mm-hmm. was there, when you think about the, and you know, Devin, you've been there and spent time there. We've all spent time there. And mm-hmm. It was a city that if you looked at the core area of San Francisco, the amount of residential of people living there was relatively small relative to the percentage of other uses and primarily office.
Yeah, in part because of the costs, right? The rents, the residential sure. rents skyrocketing. Deb, do you remember that from, I mean, you and I were in San Francisco at the same time. I think we all were in one way or another as this was happening, as the rise of tech, the bubble was just getting bigger and bigger. And now it's sort of burst thanks to the pandemic, or no thanks to the pandemic. What are your mm-hmm. thoughts on sort of these cities and what's going to happen to their commercial core?
You know, honestly, I think, Andy, as you alluded to, it feels like each city kind of has its own culture and needs to have its own comeback plan. It feels like New York, I haven't been back to New York in a while, but the sense I'm getting that there is a pulse, and whether it's companies requiring employees to go back more than a culture like San Francisco, where a lot of the tech companies are saying you don't have to or whatnot. It just feels like.
Well, in a city in New York City, Hudson Yards has a whole different vibe that's a little slow and dead than the sure. core of the city, right?
Yep. Yeah, right. There's much more diversity, whereas I think San Francisco was that monoculture, which, you know, I feel like maybe we had hints of that when it was happening, but I think it's all the more clear now.
Yeah, I mean, I'd be interested, you know, we were talking earlier about a place that my wife and I are spending time, Sarasota, Florida, and the percentage of office as a percentage of the total in the downtown core. If I had to guess, it might be 10 or 15%. I bet in San Francisco, it's 80%.
Mm-hmm.
And that makes a big difference in this new world.
Yeah. You know, I probably have stronger feelings than both of you on this, but, and I think, Andy, you bring up a great point, which is a lesson from nature, right? And those of us in the sustainability field look to nature for lessons, biomimicry, cradle to cradle, you name the idea, the metaphor. Monocultures tend not to survive, right? And all it takes is one virus, one outbreak, and they're wiped out. And the whole idea of a mixed use community, right, is just this. It's hedging against shifts and changes, many of which are not predictable. The idea of a 15-minute community, which embraced in so many places like Boulder over the last decade or so, is the idea that within 15 minutes you can access essentially essential services, right? Not necessarily for public safety reasons, but it sure comes in handy, you know, if there's a hurricane, flood, fire, to know that you've got a bodega down the street or a healthcare provider, and you can walk or bike there, right? That's the essential thing. And so isn't part of what we're learning, or part of this global feedback loop that's been generated by the pandemic, a signal, a message about our reliance on fossil fuel to move us to and fro, that we got so complacent and comfortable with this idea that we could, you know, have a bedroom community here and a job center there. And yeah, it might take you an hour each way, a super commuter as defined by the planners. But that was right and just, and we did that for 100 years. And then basically this thing happened and exposed the fragility of that way, not just for climate, you know, but for everything else.
Yeah, Devin, go ahead. I have strong thoughts, but I want to hear yours.
No, something that just came to mind is just the equity piece as well. And this isn't a direct response, but just thinking about, you know, the 15-minute community, and a key piece of that is just ensuring and supporting it being affordable. Because I see that a real challenge, and you know, communities like Boulder, it's a hard it's an expensive place to live, and maintain that 15-minute community. So,
I think we're in the middle of the biggest shift we've seen in 100 years, and I don't think we'll realize that it's happening for another 5 or 6, or admit that it's happening. But I think that we're going to be in the process of, I do believe that urbanization is part of the solution for sustainability on a long-term basis. And we've obviously seen that happen over the last 100 years, and it's likely to continue based on everything we know. But I also think that we're in the middle of rebalancing of cities and relooking at the nature of cities, and places like San Francisco are probably the best example of some of the things we got wrong. And I remember I had dinner with a woman who ran the Yellowstone Foundation. It was talking about Yellowstone Park after the fire, and how the elk, how everything was so out of balance. The elk population was so out of balance, it was dying of wasting disease, you know, just because Mother Nature figures out other ways to take care of things if the natural system isn't working. But after the fire and the reintroduction of wolves, within a decade, Yellowstone essentially rebalanced itself. And there's people who debate it back and forth, but the wolf population came up to carrying capacity. The elk population came down to carrying capacity. They stopped eating the riparian zones. The eagle population came back to carrying capacity. And I think we're going to find that these monoculture cities need to rebalance as we continue this process of urbanization. And that will include equity and affordability and the other things that are important in a balanced city.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I so agree. And I hope we can have the you know, hindsight, like San Francisco was glorified for decades.
We all loved it. The three of us all spent time there and lived there. Right. Great cities in this country.
And it's just, it's interesting. Yeah, I just hope that we all take these learnings and reflections and consequences from that monoculture approach and whatnot to, you know, urbanization moving forward.
So what do you hope that we hold on to and bring forward in terms of lessons learned from the last 3 years? You know, and again, we're still in this, and this is an unfolding and evolving process. There's no, you know, end point here. But if you had your druthers, Andy and Deb, what are the two or three things that we've learned about working, commuting, climate, affordability, all of these connected issues that we should be taking forward? Andy, you just sort of suggested a couple, but can we be specific? What do we want to learn and implement?
I'll go first on this one. I think the basic lesson is what we were just talking about, is nature, and we are part of nature, not apart from nature, is much more complex than our kind of systems give it credit for. And cities are much more complex than we've developed them as. And our job as people who want to change the future from a sustainability standpoint, you know, we went from work from home to urban design and cities and the future of them. And that's good, because that's really the discussion, right? Is work is much more complex than we've given it credit for in today's world. You don't just show up for a factory and punch your card and do your one tax. You do some things that require deep and intensive work that you should be by yourself in a quiet place, or doing something else that's more like meditation. We do other things that are collaboration. And I think cities are the same way, in that downtowns aren't just about office with a little bit of restaurant and retail veneer and some housing off to the side. They need to be much more complex and integrated. And I think that's the great lesson that we might get out of this from an urban planning standpoint.
Mm. Yeah, living cities, right? That are not just 9-to-5 cities. You go after 5 o'clock and they're dead. In fact, people start to live there again, next to where they might work. And as you said earlier, Andy, and we were all of us agreeing, that essential workforce who don't have the luxury, the choice about whether they show up or not. Dev, what about you? What are you thinking?
You know, I don't know. I don't think there's a way to predict the future. But continue to challenge ourselves to do multiple scenario planning. I think the pandemic demonstrated that, you know, stuff can happen that you'd never anticipated and will turn your world upside down in every way, and every system upside down in every way. So that's hard to plan for, but I think playing that out and playing out more than two steps ahead, let's think and 5 or 10 years ahead, let's think of 10 and 20 years ahead and 20 and, you know, 10 and 20 steps ahead. To just think, you know, what are the different phases of the city as it grows and as it evolves, and how do we maintain the values that we see and want as it takes on these new challenges or new variables and growth?
Mm-hmm. I mean, haven't we, and if you think about it, it wasn't just the pandemic the last 3 years that,
true,
that came home to roost, right? It was floods.
Everything came home to roost.
And fires and wars. Mm-hmm.
And changing retail patterns and the nature of technology and what it did to change our jobs and how we look at the world and how we buy
mental things, health, and
yours, how we change information.
Yes, the tipping point on race and equity and DEI. I mean, we've had this really tight sort of feedback loop over 3 years with all of these impacts, forces acting upon us as a collective, really requiring us, in a sense, to think about resilience, right? The sort of flip side of sustainability, which is how do we respond and bounce back better when shit hits the fan? Mm-hmm. And whether that's, you know, racial injustice or flooding, you know, how do we better respond, better prepare? And again, Andy, I think you put your finger on it, which is like diversity. There's that old saying, it takes diversity to manage diversity, a diversity of outlooks, perspectives, because we do have a variety of forces now in play from that we're aware of, that we know can disrupt our lives at any moment, from pandemics to wildfires. We've certainly seen that here in Boulder. In fact, I think Boulder is now like the U.S. epicenter for urban resilience, given everything we've experienced just in the last 4 years.
And I would say the optimist in me says, if you look back at Euclidean zoning and industrial cities of 200 years ago, we've actually come a long way in terms of diversity. We just have a long way to go. And we kind of got, you know, our legs cut out from under us here in the last 2 or 3 years, as we had the confluence of all these different things hit at one time, all accelerated by the pandemic.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I met last night with the City of Englewood, Colorado Sustainability Commission. One of my former students, Mel England, is now their first ever sustainability coordinator. So had invited me to do a Q&A with the commission talking about land use and land use reform and how to reduce commutes and how to create a more mixed use downtown in a small city of roughly 45,000 people, or maybe it's 35,000, southwest of Denver.
Yeah.
And what was so cool, Andy and Dev, was to hear from these commissioners who are all volunteers who are doing this, you know, after their day jobs. Some of them commute, some of them don't, I imagine. You know, talking about re-examining R1 zoning, rural zoning in the city of Englewood, to allow for a little more density for workforce and affordable housing. Talking about redeveloping parking lots in the downtown that sit vacant most of the time, that are accessible from and to restaurants and offices and retailers. And why shouldn't there be housing, they're asking, in downtown Englewood? That's more.
Well, I look at one of the communities right next door, Greenwood Village, Greenwood Village.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It is two monocultures. There's the office park side of Greenwood Village that's probably 60 or 70 years old and decaying and less and less interesting every day. And then there's the kind of beautiful 1 or 2 acre residential monoculture that's the other 3/4 of the community. And the residential monoculture wants to keep the office the way it is and not make it mixed use or add residential, just because of the way they evolved. And it's not neither good or bad. It's how they came to be, and they're trying to preserve that. So we're in for some rough rides in some of those places, and some great opportunities as new people come in and visionaries look at, yes, we should get more interesting. Yeah. This is a chess game. It's not checkers.
Yeah. Yeah.
I like that analogy. Yeah. I think it's, it feels like we need to move. I think so much in this industry is from talking to doing and, you know, setting goals to actually taking action. And so it feels like we know we need to bring in diverse perspectives and visionaries, and we know it, but if we need to put it in place. And it feels like, it's wonderful, William, to hear conversations that you were hearing last night, that those are being explored in maybe unexpected places. But yeah, I'm just eager to keep pushing forward and speed things up.
You know, my daughter, who's 25, has been working for 2.5 years since graduating from college remotely. So she works for an LA company.
And my son of 25 doing the same thing, has never been in an office.
You and I have talked about that. So I do wonder, in the idea of my daughter actually commuting and having a kind of, not 9 to 5, but 8 to 7 job where she's got to live one place and spend time in a car or some other form of transport to get to the office workplace. I can't imagine her or many in her generation, people in their 20s, and Deb, you see them every day, accepting those, you know, sort of traditional 20th century terms.
All right, mm-hmm. So I'm going to play the old guy thing. Isn't there a risk that they're going to become a social monoculture, right? That they're all this group of young people that stay at home and don't mix or integrate themselves with a group of other people that we all did at some level? Is that a risk? I mean, there's some downsides to some of these upsides.
I think there is, but I think they want to do it on their own terms, you know. Nobody wants to be told what to do. Yeah. And so I was reading one of the articles recently on this topic, and it mentioned that, a high majority of applicants were applying to positions that were remote. But the percentage of positions that were just remote was maybe 12%, but it attracted 80% of applicants. I can't remember exactly the stats, but it was shocking. That's what people are wanting. It's seen, and there's not one solution for all. So I have team members that want to be at the office and want that culture. And the majority though do want to be.
Did anybody ever really want to be told what to do? Isn't this to go deep and spiritual, which I know is the language of all of us. Like, isn't this a kind of self-actualization? So if you want to go to the office, like there's still the opportunity, like if that's self-actualizing for you, you have the choice and you can basically design what that looks like. For those of you who basically want to, work from home or your local co-working space or work outside, which is my passion, you do that, you do you. And as long as you get the job done that you're being paid to do, like, does anybody really care? And why should they do?
The pessimist in me says this is a rebound, that nobody really liked office and where it was and the way it was structured. So this is the reaction to that. And it's to push strong to the other side, and the pendulum's just swinging strongly the other way. The optimist in me says this is an opportunity to completely redefine work. Mm-hmm. And I believe that there's a social interaction component to it in person. And maybe it's just because I'm 63, but I think that's a really important part of life and community and all the other values we've been talking about. So I think we have to be careful that the baby doesn't get left out with the bathwater kind of thing.
I completely agree. And sometimes those benefits or those skills are hard to articulate or they're more intangible, but I think that there are these benefits and learnings and development of professional, personal and professional skills that, you're not going to get from working at home and
social animal, the screen. Right?
Yeah.
I hear you. And the father of two 20 somethings and a 30 year worker, who's sort of been a participant observer. I mean, I've always had offices. I've just chosen to not necessarily spend a lot of time in them. And as someone who's run organizations, I've always given my colleagues also a choice. But here's the thing. I mean, I find that most people spend most of the time complaining about their worker, their coworkers, their office space, their boss, their job.
And less, that's a bummer.
Celebrating social capital.
And they're not at the right job.
What's that?
They're not at the right job then. No, but not that you're wrong.
Right.
I think what Evan just said is really important, in that what I think is going to happen here, and this is my prediction, we can all go out with a prediction or two, is I think everybody's going to reshuffle what their jobs are. And it used to be that you got a job and you went to work and you sat in the office and other people didn't. Some people complained and some people loved it and whatever. I think that, as you say, the people that are offering jobs that are remote are going to get more applicants from the people that want to work remote. And people that do collaborative work are going to find themselves connecting to organizations that figure out a way to collaborate, whether it's in person or not, and do it in a way that's socially satisfying as social animals. And I think we're going to see a really interesting reshuffling that will go undocumented. It's kind of like the migration geographically that's happened in this country in intellect over the last decade. But I think you're going to see this reshuffling of jobs in a really interesting way that's probably very positive, in that people will ultimately be more satisfied as they pick the kind of job type that better fits them than just getting a job.
Mm-hmm. I think it'll ask more of the employer I guess we're kind of going through this is not to cater, but to provide a flexibility to, or at least our stance right now is to provide the flexibility. But with that, providing the structures that support one within an office, and then provide the structures that support one that just works virtually. And that's, I think, going to require companies to really stretch and grow, all for good reason, but in new ways.
Well, it's what you said earlier. What is productivity?
Right.
Yeah. Hey, folks, let's wind down. This has been super fun, really interesting conversation. I still come back to the climate piece of this, putting aside self-actualization and freedom of choice and personal sovereignty and 20 somethings, like BMT and GHG and even EV. If we've got lots of EVs on the road by 2035, as we hope to have, they're still going to be depending largely on a grid that's not green. They're still going to be heavy and require a lot of material to produce. So how do we really, at the same time, attack the climate problem and address work? Also thinking about the equity piece, right? Those who don't have the ability, the option to decide, whether they stay at home or enjoy a more flexible work life. So let's keep sort of tracking this and maybe revisit it soon, to the extent that there might be some new policy initiatives or Devin, as you observe some of your clients who, as part of their sustainability strategy, come up with some really clever VMT reducing, climate impact reducing programs.
Let's give final thoughts on where we're going to be 5 years from now, because I'm in the midst of it. We did a workshop today in our portfolio, and it made me think about it. Where are we going to be 5 years from now? What are some of those solutions with the VMT side in mind?
What are you thinking?
What got me thinking about it today is we were talking about our kind of 11 different buildings and 9 different amenities, from roof decks to courtyards to places to gather to work out. We're thinking about developing a co-working space that would support the community as part of it and make it sticky from a selfish standpoint financially, keep people around because they want to be there. And mm-hmm. thinking about it in terms of what you were saying, we've been talking about having a fleet of Teslas so people don't really need a car or a second car, that they could work from the co-working space if their company is doing that, so they don't just have to work from their home or apartment. And the 9 different amenities are designed to be within 5 minutes of walking, so you can be on a roof deck or in a courtyard or in your home or in a co-working space, and you don't need a car. But if you need a car, you can buy into a community-oriented fleet. And if you go to your office 2 or 3 days a week, because that's the nature of what you do, that's okay too. But I think that all kind of fits this framework of a better sustainability standpoint, an interesting social standpoint or community, and something that is optimistically oriented toward how do we come out of COVID in a better way. So that's my sense, is again, this chess game, not a checkers game, that's complicated and it evolves, and we'll get some things right and many things wrong, but hopefully enough things right that it doesn't, the wrongs don't really matter. But I think we're in a really fun, interesting time of transition.
Yeah.
I'd agree. I like that framing of fun and challenging, because we don't have the answers, but it feels like we've got some good ideas. And just to piggyback on Andy, I think the diversity piece, just bringing that back, diversity of perspectives and having more people at the table and early, it feels like we know that motto and approach, and yet time and again, we need to remind ourselves and really get it in play. And so I think, just having more of those conversations that are bringing in a diverse group of stakeholders and perspectives. I also wanted to touch on, we're talking about commutes, particularly around driving, but I think also what I have seen companies do is really limit their air travel. And I think as we're working better and having policies and mandates, we don't need to travel for this, whether it's for a cost perspective or a climate perspective, all good things. And so I think that becoming more and more of the norm and a little bit of a sideline topic to what we're talking about today, but certainly contributes to the conversation.
Oh, totally.
Williams, sum it all up and close it out.
Yeah. Well, thanks. That was awesome. We didn't even talk about the air piece. It's huge. Air travel, big impact. It's crazy to me that we're just sort of defaulting back.
Right.
So many amazing things, convening conference-wise, we can be doing with these wonderful virtual tools at a fraction of the climate costs, let alone other costs. So a few things that I'm going to pay attention to and going forward the next several years. One is to us developers versus the commercial real estate brokers. The developer really needs to think, and I'm talking, Andy, about people like us who are social impact, sustainability minded, who are always thinking about mixed use programs and mixed income programs. We have to thread these needles. We've got to get financing. We've got to figure out engineering design. And if indeed work from home, commuter patterns, office space are going to change, that's where we're going to see the new models from clever, creative developers and financiers. So I'm going to pay attention to us and how we navigate. And that includes conversions, of office space and office parks to something other, which I'm super excited about. Number two, climate. Like, how is climate, if we're going to get real about it versus blow smoke, I think climate has a lot to say about how we get to work and where we fly and where we drive, as well as investment in transit and other transit infrastructure to make our commutes less carbon intensive for the next half century. Paying attention to that. The nature of the workforce, as we were saying, from essential workforce to so-called white collar, how is that evolving? Who gets to choose where they can or cannot work? I really think we've got to pay attention to that essential workforce that we did pay attention to during the pandemic because we had to. So many of our lives depended on it. And now that it's less life-threatening, at least the pandemic is, how are we going to support those folks who provided for us during that period? So I think these are going to be really interesting discussions, debates, policy action. And I'm excited to not only pay attention, but to see some real changes be implemented. Oh, finally, let's pay attention to 20-somethings. My kids, Andy's kids, Dev, the young staff that you mentor and work with, who, are kind of drawing a line in the sand, like, I'll do this, I won't do this. And we can either, terminate their employment, or we can say, maybe they've got a good point here. Let's look at our corporate policy,
No, I agree.
All right, folks, that was super fun. Signing off for now.
We'll do it again.
That sounds great. Thanks all.
Thanks to you, and thanks for listening.